My name is Bob, and I'm a member of the Tuesday Night Men's Group in San Francisco. And I guess we're going to be talking to the newcomer, huh? That's nice. When I came to this program, when I attempted to get clean, the first time I attempted to do anything about my addiction was back in 1972. And what I did was I went to a 10-day methadone detox, and that was a mistake. Or maybe it wasn't a mistake. I really can't tell. While I was in this 10-day methadone detox, somebody had mentioned that they were going to have a meeting down in such and such a room. And I said, that's nice. And I sat there continuing to talk, because I didn't want to be bothered. Besides, I didn't know anything about meetings. And when they gave me my last drink of methadone, I said, thank you very much, and I hit the door, stepping fast, you know, because I had five or six bags of heroin waiting for me up in my hotel room. I had $400 or $500 in cash down at the cashier's office. And I believe that the only reason I went to this 10-day methadone detox was to kind of clean up my my habit a little bit, because I was a seaman and I was getting ready to jump on an airplane and go right back out to Singapore. So I went back, and you know, after even doing that, the 10 days of methadone, you know, shit, them five or six bags I had there, you know, they weren't nothing. I had a hard time even getting through the methadone. So I was still sick. And it was about 2.5 weeks later that I ended up on an airplane, excuse me, going back to Singapore, with an overnight stop in Hong Kong. And when I got to Hong Kong, I used to call Hong Kong, was to me, was Smackland, because I had a connection in Hong Kong that I've been using for 9 or 10 years. When I'd go to this man's home, he'd break out this great big bowl of China White. And this time here, as I was passing through Hong Kong, you know what? I was ashamed to go to this man's house because I didn't have any money. And all I would have had to do was to go through there and tell him that, you know, let me have a half a piece or a piece, you know, and I'll pay you on the way back through. And he'd have done that. He'd have fronted it to me because I was a good customer. And I was always good with my, credibility. Even as an addict, the way you maintain your credibility is that you pay your bills. You know, you don't burn your connections. But I've burnt my connections many, many times. If I'd probably got a half ounce off of this guy here, I'd have probably burnt them, you know. It's as simple as that, because I had no idea I was going to be coming back through there again. But anyway, I went back out to Singapore, and I was out there for another 13 months. And when I came back to San Francisco, I was just as sick as I was when I went out there the first time. So I stood out there for 13 months, and we never came back to San Francisco. And this time here, when I came back, I guess I threw a half a kilo of opium over the side, you know, because I was scared. There was all these customs agents were down on the dock with these big dope-sniffing dogs, And I had this one last great big piece of opium that I took, you know, and they jacked us up on the ship there for quite some time. And when I walked off the ship, I was starting to get sick. And I immediately went up to Ellison and Leavenworth, and there was my partners. And went right back into my addiction. But, you know, it seemed like no matter how much of that stuff that I pumped into my arm, nothing happened. I couldn't get that feeling, you know. No matter how much heroin that I pumped into my arm or how much booze that I poured down my throat, nothing happened. And I laid up in that hotel room, and I was depressed all the time, you know, and I was angry all the time, and I wanted to die. I wanted to die, you know, and if I'd have had the guts, I'd have took my life. You know, I thought, I want to emphasize the word thought. You see, I was a thinker. I wasn't too much of a doer. I was a thinker. I was thinking that maybe I ought to go into the bathroom and tie a towel or a sheet or something to one of those overhead things and do one of those numbers on myself. I'd walk across the street to the liquor store, you know, to buy another bottle of this J&B scotch, because I was one of them high-class dope fiends, you know. And I'd be standing on a corner waiting for the light to change, and a bus would come by, and this thought would go through my head, well, why don't you dive under the rear wheels of the bus? You know, why don't you just do it? Step out in front and end it all. But, you know, I was really scared, because the neighborhood that I came from, there was a lot of people, a lot of my homeboys were all dead, you know, I mean, either by their own hand or somebody else's hand, you know. And it seemed like they died, we went to a funeral, we never talked about them again. And I knew that I had more coming, you know. I knew that I was a better person, and that actually what I was looking for was to have somebody say that Bob was a nice guy. You know, not going into a funeral parlor and looking and saying, well, the only reason I showed up was to make sure that that asshole was really laying there. You know what I mean? And I had a lot of fear behind that there. But anyway, the day came when the stuff just didn't work. All I did was perspire. I sweated a lot. And the day came when I woke up on a Saturday morning, and I pumped that five or six or seven bags off into my arm, you know, and I went over to my daughter's house, and I said, like, your old dad wants to change his life, and I'm tired of living like this here, and I want to change, but I don't know how. How am I going to do it? And it got pretty emotional, you know, and through a series of circumstances, you know, I OD'd on alcohol, and I ended up on a gurney over at the San Francisco General Hospital. And when I came to, and the doctor was standing there with my daughter and her little girlfriend, I told the doctor, I'm a dope fiend and a drunk, and I want to go into detox, you know, because I can't live like this anymore. And this dude started laughing. I told him, I said, this is pretty serious. What are you laughing for? He says, you know what, all you guys are all the same. You all want to go into detox on a weekend. You know, this was a Saturday. And when I really look back at it, you know, he's right. You know, everybody wants to go to detox because there ain't nothing happening. You know, I mean, the stealing is bad, you know. Anyway, through a series of circumstances, I never went back to a doctor until Monday morning. I went to my daughter's house and I stood there. The doctor gave me a few of them chlorohydrates, which really didn't work. And I went into the public health hospital. And this was the first time in my life that I ever walked into a doctor's office and I took my coat off, or coats off, you know, because I was extremely cold and I needed help walking. And I went like that. And I said, I shoot heroin, you know, I drink booze, I take pills, you know, and I need help. And the doctor said, that's the magic word around here, you know, help. And they took me in, and they put me on a... I got to emphasize the fact that there was this little nurse that was in the program. Her name was Frankie Ford. She took one look at me, and she said, now, wait a minute, doctor. She said, before we let this man enter the hospital, I want him to sign this form. And this form said that I would not verbally intimidate or assault anybody with my hands or my mouth. She made me right from the gate. You know, I was one of those, I was one of them Bull Garden dudes, man. You know, like, you know, I was an intimidator. And it really pissed me off. I caught the hell of an attitude about that there, you know, because she knew who I was. She knew the kind of asshole I was. So they took me into the hospital and put me on this methadone detox, and they brought me up, they peaked me, brought me down, and cut me off, and dropped me. And you know what? I didn't know what was happening, man. It was the first time in my life that I'd been chemical free of my own volition. You know, of my own free will, I went in and I detoxed. It wasn't like being on a ship, you know, where I was forced to go through the withdrawal. Besides, when I was on a ship, you know, I'd go from the spoon to the bottle. You know, I was one of those flip-floppers, you know. By the time I'd get back to Hong Kong, you know, shit, I'd be a hope to die, shake them up in the morning drunk, you know. I was just going from one addiction to another. And when they dropped me off of that methadone, man, there I was. I was sitting there and I said, holy mackerel, what's happening here? You know, but now I got to get honest with you. You see, in that detox, in that 28-day program, there was some young people in there, some youngsters. And the old dude fell in with the youngsters, and we used to go up and smoke that shit up on the roof. We used to goof on the roof, you know? And it was one thing that I did have, you know, I didn't have any kind of recovery, but I had some money, you know, and I brought him a couple of lids, you know, and we used to smoke that stuff. And finally, on a Tuesday night, a man walked into this place, and he shared his experience, strength, and hope with me, you know. And when I say that, I mean that when this man walked in and sat down and started talking, it would seem like everything faded away, and there was him and I, you know. And he talked all those things that lit up for me. I had all kind of little lights going on, you know. And at the end of the meeting, this man, I walked over to him, and this guy was a real quick study, you know, Frank Brennan. You know, he's a real quick study. He took one look at me and he says, you know, he said, I got a couple of guys I want to send up here to see you. And he sent this two guys, Dennis and Tim. And one guy talked fast and the other guy talked slow. And I didn't know where these two cats were coming from, you know. And this was the first time in my life that anybody ever walked into a place where I was at and reached out and shook my hand and didn't want nothing. You know, anytime anybody'd get off the ship, somebody would walk up, shake my hand, you know, this is what it was all about. You know, like, what can I do for you, Bob? I got the bag. I know where the bag's at. I know who's got it good. You want some? You got some money? You know, how about the times when you come around and you didn't have any money? you know, and you walked up on the set and they said, oh shit, here comes Bob. And they all start looking for goddamn goody birds, you know. They're not going to look at you, you know, because they know that you're going to hit on them, you know. Anyway, these two guys came up, you know, and they said, what can we do for you? You want to go to a meeting? And they started taking me to meetings. And you know what? That's what I got to emphasize here to the new person. Hello, darling. Hello, sweetheart. You know, what we do here is it's suggested that you hook up with somebody that's got some time. You know, even just a little bit more time than you, you know, and hang and stick together, you know, and that's what these guys did. You know what, in 1976 in San Francisco, we only had two NA meetings a week. Two NA meetings a week. So, if you wanted to go to a meeting on Sunday, you had to go to Berkeley. You know, or you had to go to San Jose, or you had to go to the breakfast meeting in Santa Rosa, you know. But I did a lot of traveling. We put a lot of miles on this dude's pickup truck. But the thing is that this guy took me under his wing, you know. And it seemed like every time I got into this guy's pickup, I had to tell him that I got loaded again. I tell him, man, you know what, I did it again. But finally, every time I'd get in this dude's pickup truck, he'd look at me and he'd say, how you doing, Bobby? He says, how much time do you have this time? And, you know, after a while, you know, that shit gets old, man, you know. I used to get high with my daughter, Adrian, and I'd go over, she was living right around the corner from my oldest daughter. I'd go over there and these ladies that she was living with, the old dad would walk in and they'd twist up, you know, two, three, four doobies, you know, and I'd sit there and I'd smoke with them. You know, then I'd go to the Thursday night NA meeting. You know, and this one night, you know, I walked in and everybody was sitting around the table. Our fellowship back in 1976 was very small. But anyway, this night I walked in and here was Lawrence A. from San Jose. You know, and I come popping on in there, you know, and he looked at me, you know, and he knew. And I knew that he knew. And you want to hear about some paranoia? You know, I thought that he thought that blah, 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 and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I wanted to get up and I wanted to book, you know, but I was scared that everybody would know that I was loaded. And he impressed the hell out of me, you know, because he talked to me, but he talked around me. You know, he even let me get profound, you know. He even let me rap, man. He even let me shoot my mouth off. And after the meeting, he took me aside and he said, hey, you know what, partner? He says, I know you're high, man. You know? He says, I know you're high. He says, and you know what? This is a program of abstinence, total abstinence. You want to be a member of this program, you got to stop getting high. You know? Got to quit smoking that shit. So I quit smoking that weed. And I had a hard time with the other stuff. You know, I was a needle freak, man. I like to stick needles in my arms. I wanted to go back down to see my homeboys on the TL, man, you know, and give them what I had. So I called up Dennis one night and I said, God damn, Dennis, there's a bunch of sick motherfuckers down here. He said, where are you? I told him, I'm down on, you know, Eddie and Leavenworth. He said, oh, boy, he says, you're going to get loaded. I told him, no, not me, man. I said, besides, you know, you told me that I can only keep what I have by giving it away. There, he said, but shit, he said, you ain't got nothing. Yeah, and you knew. You know, but over a period of time, you know, and you hear these people, you see, back then, nobody really put you down. You know, you come in, raise your hand. You know, nobody put you down. I did it a few times. I told some woman one time, how dare you get loaded? I mean, how come you got loaded when you got all these beautiful people around here? Now, a bunch of sick motherfuckers sitting around looking at her, man. Looking down their noses at her. Every time I sat down, this broad would come over, sit down alongside me, and when she'd look at me, her eyes would be so pinpointed, she'd look like a snake. You know, it used to piss me off. And the reason I used to get pissed off was because I wasn't the one that was feeling like her. You see, because I wasn't the one that got loaded. But over a period of time, you know, they say that if you're new here, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. You know, there's a miracle that's going to happen in your life if you stick around here and you don't take nothing. You know, because it happened to me. You know, one morning I woke up and the compulsion to take something had been taken away from me. You know, and it's been beautiful. I've been clean for 13 and a half years, man. You know, and that was something that I couldn't do for myself. You see, the times that I did try to clean up by myself, you know, I was one of those people that was testy. In a way that I mean testy, I mean I was a very, I was one of those people that you had to be careful what you said, you see, because my feelings got hurt real easy, you know, and I'd retaliate in a very negative way. I'd scream at you, I'd holler at you, you know. They told me when I got here, you know what, we don't hurt nobody here. I was a physical person. If you did me wrong, I'd get physical with you. I'd cop a Sunday on you, you know. I'd kick you in the knee. Or I'd hit you with a 2x4, or I'd cut you. You know, I reached a point in my life, I was born and raised out in the Bayview Hunters Point. You know, I reached a point in my life where I quit cutting people. You know, because if you cut the sucker, they come back. You know, so then you start stabbing them, man. You know? And it gets a little bit easier for you. You get a reputation for being crazy and people quit fucking with you. You know? Anyway, you know, I fought this program every bit of the way. You know? And then I reached that point where I wanted to be a part of this program. I was tired of being around this program, you know? And all those little things came in to happen, to be. You know, I came to believe in a power greater than myself. I sat down and I gave myself away in the form of a fourth and a fifth step. You know, and I'm aware of all those defects and shortcomings that I got. And I went back and I made amends wherever possible. You know, and when I do something wrong today, you know what? I don't promptly admit it, but I do admit it. You know, I'm still a hard ass in some areas. But the thing is that today I'm responsible. I'm not only responsible for what I do, but I'm responsible for what I say. And that's what this program has done. You know, it's made me a responsible, productive member of society. Every word that's come out of my mouth has come out of our basic text. You see? Because that's what I am today. I'm a member of this program. I'm not around this program. I'm a member of this program. And for the newcomer, you know what? Just keep coming back. You know? Be careful. Be careful. You know? Don't take nothing. You know, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, hook up with some people. You know, don't take nothing. And this program will do for you what you couldn't do for yourself. This is great, man. It's a hell of a nice way to live. And I'm proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, when I got here yesterday, I went out to the front desk and I started to cop an attitude from that dude behind the desk, man. You know, it seemed like that motherfucker was talking down to me, man. You know, and you know what? I don't let people talk down to me. You know, I'll tell you, you start talking down to me and I'll let you know about it. You know, here it is. Here it is. There's my brother back there. So, if you want some, come and get it. Thank you.
like to have Roseanne come up and speak with me.
My name's Roseanne, and I'm an addict. And I don't even really need this thing because volume has never been one of my problems. I want to welcome Adam and Joey and any other newcomers who either didn't introduce themselves or came in late. You know, you're in the right place if you want to stop using. And if you stay here, I guarantee that if you work at it, your life will change. I know that for me, just coming to these rooms didn't change my life. You know, just coming here and, like, not taking something for a short amount of time, which was what I did before I got involved in this program, didn't change my life, you know, because I brought all of me here with me. I was the same dope fiend that drove up here, and today I'm just an addict, you know. Today I suffer from a disease called addiction, but when I got here I was a dope fiend, and that maybe gives you a little indication of, what kind of person I was when I got here, because I had a lot of pride in that. I had a lot of pride invested in being a dope fiend and being able to hang out there and do that stuff. I mean, when I got to this program the first couple rounds, and if you're new, don't think that you can always come here and go out and come back. I mean, we talk about that a lot because that's part of our stories, but you don't hear from the people who never make it back. You don't hear from the people we bury. You don't hear from the people who, like, go to the pen and never come out, or the ones who just stay out there in the trenches, man, doing it every day with unwillingness to get clean. You don't hear that here. And when you're new, I think that you really need to know that the door is always open. We always got our arms out saying, hey, you're welcome here, but you don't always walk through it. You know, so if you're here today and you got 1 day, 9 days, 10 days, 10 years, stay here. It's a lot easier to stay clean than it is to get clean. You know, once you wake up in the morning and you don't have that thing in your gut, you all know what that is, that driving obsession to get out there and get it, you know what, it's a lot easier to stay in these rooms and do your part here than it is to try to overcome that obsession. I mean, I have a compulsion to put chemicals in my body, and once I take something, I have an obsession. That's what the basic text tells me. I have an obsession to get out there and get it no matter what it takes. No matter what. When I got to this program this time, I had a couple, like, hanging threads of things I hadn't done yet. Like, I hadn't told on anybody, and I hadn't stole from my friends, because I could still sell my ass, so I didn't need to steal from my friends. But I really know today that if I'd have stayed out there long enough for that not to work, I would have stole from you. I mean, I know that. I didn't believe that when I got here, because it was the last pieces of twisted morals that I was hanging on to. You know, those are last little threads of being a dope fiend that I could stand up for. See, my addiction took me to places that, when I started using, I had a set of values. I had a set of values that were probably instilled in me as a child, and some of it I, like, made up and thought sounded good, but I had some values. And some of it I learned from those dope fiends that were older than me, because I always hung out with those older dope fiends that had been to prison, and I learned that stuff. That always impressed me. The sicker you were, the more you impressed me, and the more I wanted to be around you, you know. And that's where my head was at from a real young age, you know. And so those are the kind of values that I learned in my addiction. As I progressed in my addiction, I couldn't live up to those anymore. I kept crossing those lines inside myself, not those lines like society sets for you, not those boundaries that they tell you got to live in, because I still don't do good with that today. And really have no desire to live up to society's ideas of what I should be. But I needed to live up to my own. And that's really what recovery is about for me today. But in my addiction, I couldn't live up to my own values. Because my addiction was a kind of, you know, like all our addiction, I went to any lengths to get my dope. Or whatever I had to do. So I kept having to do things that were against my own value system. And so what I did, because I couldn't live up to it, is I kept changing my value system. I kept changing it around and adjusting it and making it trying to feel okay inside of Roseanne and justify what I was doing. You know, if I had to do something that, like, fucked you over, you know, I had to justify in my head that you were an asshole and that you did something and you had it coming, or you were just a lame. If you were nice to me and you, like, wanted to help me, I mean, I had people in my life that like, felt bad for me. They thought it was all his fault, you know. Like, he was, like, doing this to me, and really, you know, that's, like, it was part of the game, you know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, look what this dude's doing to me, poor me. Yeah, let me stay at your house. Give me dope. Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, this motherfucker. All that stuff, you know, was part of my game. I had people trying to help me. And during that time, I did things to those people. You know, like I burned them, I did weird shit to them, and I would have to justify in my head that you were either you did something, you were an asshole, or you were lame. And you had it coming because you were too weak or something. I had to do all that justification inside myself to feel okay. And over the course of time that I used, which wasn't like the exorbitant amount of time, I mean, I got to this program this time and I was only 24 years old, and but I was like through. During that time, I did so many things and eventually couldn't like make it all go away. I couldn't shut it off. I mean, dope didn't make it go away for me any longer. I couldn't shut off the pain. I couldn't justify it anymore. It was too painful to stay loaded. And I had been here before, like I said. I was graced with the privilege to be able to come back here. We don't all get that. Please just stay here if you're here. And I came back here with all that garbage. I had a terrible, terrible attitude. Terrible attitude. I lived behind a whole facade, you know, my whole image about what I was about, that still, a lot of it's there. A lot of it's still there. You know, a lot of my protection mechanisms are still up, you know, and I'm like the aggressive type of protector. That's the outside I wear. I can still like intimidate you without even realizing I'm doing it. I just do that. I mean, just by the way I look, I can still do that. And it's not something I'm really comfortable with, but I've come to accept in this program that it comes down in pieces. It just comes down in little pieces, and I'm not the person that I was 4 years ago. I am not that person. I'm not that dope fiend. I'm not that heroin addict. I'm not that, you know, person who went to jail. I'm not that person anymore, and I don't, like, even want to be. I'm really happy today just to be an addict. Just to be an addict, not to have to live up to any of those things. You know, it took me a couple years in the program to get the message of our first step that talks about being powerless over our addiction. I thought it said drugs for a long time. I guess I probably didn't even fucking read it. And I probably didn't even listen at the beginning of the meeting because I was talking to my friend over here and looking at him or her or, you know, them or talking about somebody else. You know what I mean? That's what I did a lot when I got here and sometimes still do. I wasn't, like, paying attention. And I introduced myself when I was here, you know, as a dope fiend alcoholic. I mean, I got clean in an institution that pounded that other thing in my head, you know, that I had a dual addiction, which is like bullshit. I have addiction. I mean, that's what I suffer from. I suffer from a disease called addiction, and it doesn't care what I put in my body, where I get it from. It puts it off. And today I really know that I have like one disease, and for me I have one program, which is Narcotics Anonymous. You can do whatever you feel is good for you, you know, but that's where I get my recovery because it's NA is all-encompassing, you know. It tells me that I have a disease called addiction. It doesn't name a chemical, and it took me a couple years probably to get over that. I identified myself as a heroin addict because I thought that was prestigious. That's how sick I was when I got here. I really know that there was nothing prestigious about that today, and there's nothing impressive. And really, my drug of choice was more of whatever. And it took me a while to, like, cop that I smoked PCP. I mean, you know, I did anything. It was there. I took it. You know, and where I got clean in this institution, we like to make fun of people who smoke that, so I like, because we need to feel better about ourselves. So we would, like, make fun of other people who took other drugs at their expense. We would try to feel better about our sick self. And so we did a lot of that, and it took me a while to, like, really cop to, you know what, I would take anything. It didn't matter. I took things I didn't like. I knew that I was going to feel bad after I took it, and I took it anyway. See, because I didn't like the way Roseanne felt in the first place, and even feeling bad on drugs is better than just feeling like I did. You know, anything was better than feeling the way Roseanne did. When I got to the program the first couple times through the court system, and I see the court is still doing its job. We go to meetings, we have stacks of those court cards. They're still bringing you here. God's still using them as a tool to get you to NA, because that's, I believe, the only solution that's going to work for this addict is Narcotics Anonymous. I got here and I was totally unwilling to change. I like was in this recovery house and hung out with the convict dope fiends and learned some more like stuff from them and thought I worked the first three steps. Thought I did. Unwilling to do four or any of that other stuff that was like silly. We don't want to do that. I just hung out, and you can do that here. But you know what? I didn't stay clean. I didn't stay clean, and I don't believe that you will stay clean for very long if you don't choose to incorporate the 12 steps into your life. You might for a while, but what the quality of your life is will be questionable. Because my disease is alive and well, and if I don't treat that disease on a daily basis, I get sick, and I'm not, like, doing too good, and I'm not feeling too good. And addicts are the type of people who seek relief. You know, and after you get here, if you don't seek it through the 12 steps, you'll probably do the sex, shopping, food stuff, and then eventually you'll probably take some dope, you know, because we're those type of people. We need to feel okay, you know. And so when I first got here, I thought that I worked the first three steps, but today, it took me till I have about a year clean this time to realize that I didn't have the conception of one and all together. I didn't know what it meant to be powerless over my addiction. I had no idea what that really meant deep inside me. I knew that my life was unmanageable. At that point, when I got here the first time, I was like 20 years old, had about four court cases, I lived in the back of a panel, had a heroin habit, you know what I mean? Didn't take anybody with an IQ much above plant life to figure out, like, your life is really unmanageable. I mean, you are really screwed up. I knew that. Okay, my life's unmanageable. Maybe I need to stay clean. But I didn't know what it meant to be powerless over my addiction. And I thought I was still, like, being powerless over drugs and that I could work the marijuana maintenance program and socially smoke weed and fix on. And then after I did that, I decided I could fix on the weekends. And I don't know anybody who socially sticks needles in their body. It's really not a social thing to do, you know. But somewhere in my sickness, I thought that was, I could do that. And that worked for one weekend. You know, one weekend I socially fixed on the weekend. And the next week it got, like, the weekend was, like, 4 days long. And pretty soon, okay, I was off and running again. And that one got me to the place where I was powerless over my addiction. Way deep inside my soul, my gut, way inside me, I knew it was over. I knew it was over before I got back here. Before I could stop taking something. I would fix at the end and go, let's go to a meeting. It was over. You know it's over when you're doing that. If you're in a meeting, loaded, it's over. It's done. You're through. Why would you want to do that? But I did that. I did that. And today I really welcome people. If you're in a meeting and you've taken something, you know what? You're welcome here. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop. And if I could ever have got stopped, I would have never needed to come here. Because I couldn't even get stopped, let alone stay stopped. Some people can stop but can't stay stopped. I couldn't even get stopped. So I kept coming here until I finally got stopped. And the first step happened to me. It wasn't something that I came and picked the basic text up and read it and said, okay, no, I knew. With all of my whole being, I knew I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. I knew that. And through the time that I've been clean, that's the only thing I've always known. Always. I've known that. Even when it's, like, really insane. I heard Tuffy say it one time. Serenity is when you have that, like, really calm, safe place inside you when all about you may be turmoil, but you know it's going to be okay. And you know, I have that today. And when he said that, I thought, oh, wow, I got it. I kept thinking that I'd be somewhere else, like, humming on a mountaintop, you know, and finally be serene, you know. And I have that place inside me, you know. There's been times in my recovery when my whole life has been chaotic. But deep inside, I've known it's going to be okay, and I know that I'm powerless, and if I don't take anything, it's going to be all right. If I don't take anything and choose to pick up the tools and do something about what's happening in my life, you know, I'm not one of these type of people. And when I had about 2 years and was in my 2 year and real arrogant, I thought it was because of some kind of virtue that I, like, did what I was supposed to when I was supposed to do it. But today, I really know that it's out of, like, I'm a wimp. I don't like to feel pain. I don't like to be uncomfortable. So it's like when I get that way, I go, okay, what do we do now? Like, steps? Okay. Well, right? Okay. Well, what do I do? I'm go to a meeting, talk about it, show my ass in front of you, tell you like I'm all screwed up and it's not going good and I don't have it all together. I mean, I've done that here. I continue to do that here, and I believe that that's why I stay here. I continue to be willing to do what it takes to stay here. Just like when you got here, I don't know about you when you were new. Some of us don't get here real willing, but I got here really willing. I got here so tore up, so beat down, in so much pain that the dope didn't even touch it anymore. Didn't make it go away at all. And so when I got here and I kicked and got rid of the drugs in my system, there was a lot of pain inside me. And I hid behind a whole bunch of anger. I used to have this counselor that wasn't even an addict. She was about crazy. I mean, she was like really weird. They fired her later. She was really weird. But she used to tell me all the time, you spray anger everywhere. And I used to think, well, like, no shit. You know what I mean? Like, I just came in off the streets. I was a prostitute. I just been out of the pen 4 months. No, I'm Susie Cream Cheese. What do you think? You know? I mean, that was my whole defense because I was really, actually really afraid and really hurt inside. And that's the same defense that I have today. It's not like it's apparent all the time, but it kept you like far enough away from me. In that like institution I was in, I allowed like a couple people to get close to me, and I started to get like honest with one other person who it like changed for me this time. It happened to be a woman. I mean, it had to change for me because I really thought that I wanted to be one of the guys. And, you know, they used to tell me stuff like, oh, you're just like one of the guys. And, you know, I thought that was so cool. And today I really know that I can manipulate the guys. So that's why I wanted to hang out with you. And you really couldn't know who I was. And so when I got here this time, I started to get honest with somebody who had like a couple days clean more than me. I started to tell them how I really felt. I started to do that stuff that they suggested. I started to listen to you. When I was new, I had selective listening. You needed to be a certain color and have taken a certain drug and came from a certain place before I listened. Thankfully, there was enough people. Our fellowship is have enough people that come from different places that there was I could hear a few things. And so I started to understand that it didn't matter. That none of that stuff mattered. That none of it mattered. And today I really know none of it matters. And the message comes through all different mouths to me. You know, the message that God gives us comes from all different places. And it comes from that person who just went out and took something and OD'd. That's a message to me. That's a message that I want to take something. And it comes to me from the people that I know that are in my life who choose not to, like, practice these principles and they whine and whine and whine for a long time, and eventually they get loaded and it tells me, okay, like, I don't want to do that. I want to stay in the principles of this program. I started to get into the steps and started to look at Roseanne. And the first like couple inventories I ever wrote were real for the first couple years anything I wrote on paper was real like surface that I wasn't really afraid to even tell you. You know, there wasn't really anything that I couldn't even, like, talk about. And it hasn't been until the last couple years of my recovery that I've begun to get down on like, some deeper levels with myself and some scary levels. Some real scary awarenesses about Roseanne, but I know that I have a couple choices here. I have a choice to do it the way NA says I should do it, or I have the choice to do it the way Roseanne wants to do it. And I know what Roseanne's program brings Roseanne. And so I choose to do it the way NA does it says, and the way basic text teaches me. And so I go to meetings and I work the steps, and you know, they kind of come automatic for me. And if you're new, you need to, like, I don't care how much time you have or how much you don't have or whatever, you need to really get into the solution. Don't let people tell you stuff like, oh, you don't have enough time to work those steps. You know, that will save your life. I hear that sometimes. Oh, you only have 2 months. Don't worry about it. Like, if I wasn't in the steps with 2 months clean, I don't think I'd be standing here today. Because I was, like, tore up when I got here. And some people can, like, stay for a long time and not do anything, but it's a lot easier just to get into the solution because, for me, I learned how to practice them. You know, it's continual practice. I'll never get them perfect, but I learned that, okay, I felt bad, and I did this stuff, and I followed direction of this person that I called my sponsor, and I felt better. Okay? So when I had about 2 years clean and the shit started hitting the fan, I knew where to go. Had I have never have done that, I would have not known what to do. I would have had no faith in them. I would have had no faith that it would work. I mean, I even, like, wrote in one inventory, But I thought it was all about him, you know, but it really was all about me, that I don't even think this is going to work, but I don't know what else to do. And you know what? It did work. And it made me have a real security in them, like they're my security blanket. Like I know that with another addict in my hand and knowledge of the steps and the fellowship that like and the power that I found here that I really don't understand, that I can make it. I can make it through whatever is coming down in my life. I know that. I don't have to take anything. I know that. If I choose to do that. That's a for sure for me. I mean, there's not any guarantees, but I know that inside that if I do what I have to do, I don't have to take anything. And say, like, show me how to do this. If you're new, don't be, like, shy on us all of a sudden. I mean, I know that you were out there 30 days ago trying to get in Chewy's pad to meet him so you didn't have to go through your partner, you know what I mean? You would have went to any lengths to get next to the connection or somebody with the bag or maybe he'll give me half. You would have, like, you would have done it. You would have not, like, hesitated and, oh, I'm shy, I don't want to stick my hand out, or maybe I shouldn't do that. And I know it's kind of weird when you don't have drugs in your system, but you got to apply some of them same principles here. Some of those same things that were like bad out there can be good for you here. You can stick your hand out and say, because we're really self-centered by nature. And so the rest of us who have been here a while, sometimes we'll go to a meeting and we'll talk to our friends and we may even see you standing over there by yourself and be too self-centered to even go talk to you. That is the truth. I see it all the time. I'm guilty. I'll raise my hand. I mean, we do it all the time. So you have to, like, be willing to stick your hand out and say, you know, hi, I'm Roseanne, and I'm new. And you'll feel all weird, and it'll be all weird. But, you know, you'll do it. And then next time you see them, maybe we'll have enough, like, courtesy to say, hi, how you doing? You know, instead of just do what we do a lot, which is sad but true. I mean, it's like that a lot. And so you gotta like, maybe you should pick a meeting and go to it every week. That was really good for me and it's still really good for me. I go to the same meeting every week and I see the same faces and we get kind of to be like a little family. And we all love each other and we care about what's happening and it's a little more personal than going to a lot of different meetings and never seeing the same faces because I can be real, real anonymous that way. And you can never get to know me and I can keep you out there. But if I don't let a few people in to really know who I am, then I might not be able to stay clean. I have to let you in. I have to be willing to say, I'll take this risk to get this gain, you know. And I've developed some friendships here that are incredible, that who know who I really am, who see past all the stuff, who love me when I fall down, who say it's okay, who tell me the truth. You know, who I tell the truth to. I don't co-sign your shit, you don't co-sign mine. And it works really good that way. It works really good. This program has saved my life and continues to on a daily basis. Continues to, because I'm willing to get up on a daily basis and try to save my own life. You know, the power that I understand doesn't get out and take me to a meeting, doesn't write inventories for me, gives me the willingness or the ability to do it if I'm willing. If I'm willing to say, you know what, I want to do this, I have the ability. And I believe, you know, I'm clean by the grace of God and my willingness. Because the grace of God is always there. Like, I hear people say a lot, you know, by the grace of God, I'll have, you know, how much time pretty soon. No, I believe that God's always willing. Or if God's willing, I'll have this much time or something. You know, God that I understand is always willing. Is Roseanne willing? This is the question. Am I willing to do what it takes to stay here? That's what's really the key. And if you can hang on to some of that desperation that you got, that you have if you're new, or that you had when you were new, and remember what it was really like the day you drove up to this program, like the day, what you felt like that day, and hang on to some of that desperation and really remember it, I think that it helps with my willingness. Because I can remember where I come from. Because after you've been here a couple of years, sometimes you get feeling like you got it all together or something. I'm clean today, but we forget that, like, the real miracle is that you didn't take any dope today. That's the real miracle. If you're here in this room and you haven't taken anything today, that's the miracle. That's all that you're guaranteed here. The basic text talks about freedom from active addiction. that's guaranteed here, that if you do these things, you'll have freedom from an active addiction. And that's more than I could ask for. That's all I wanted when I got here. And you know what? I've gotten so much more since I've been here. So much more. And my life continues to get better, and I continue to get better because I continue to want to choose to look at myself so that I can feel comfortable in my own skin. And I'm really grateful to be here and have a great convention. Thanks.
We have around 15 more minutes. I'd like to open up the meeting for discussion. Anybody like to come up?
Yeah, how about the mic? Hi, Paul. The revenue, the mic,
I mean, it's fucking me to come up here.
Yeah, I had to do something last night, though, because nobody fucks with Paul no more. Yeah, I had to do what I had to do. See, Paul, this has a veneer. I'm glad to see people like you here. See, some people died from L.A. when I got here to help me. Joe's with the man today, huh? Joe was a lot of help to my sobriety. See, Paul was the biggest asshole who came into Alcoholic Anonymous. Stone asshole. But it's okay if they don't believe the higher power. See, about 3 blocks away from here, I still go to meetings down there. See, the winos have to do that. See, I don't let nobody fuck with me no more. See, I had to bring this 12 steps and all this sick shit. See, I relate to the sickos. See, that job I had over 20 years, you couldn't tell me nothing. He couldn't tell me anything. I know it at all. And then I came in this program and I changed. I worked with others around Alcoholics Anonymous. I still work with them. I haven't been down to American Flowers for a long time. See, I love them three because one said last night, he says, "You're one of us. You ain't a shitting, Jose. I'm one of you." See, I wasn't honest for a long time. A bunch of addicts and alcoholics got Paul honest. See, I'm one of the hopeless addicts and alcoholics came into Alcoholics Anonymous. See, them old folks got me honest. I'm glad to see you here. I'm glad to see the whole bunch. See, Paul's 55 years old and I just had 11 years in this program. See, but I ain't the asshole no more. See, but I can't change nobody. I let them be where they're at. See, I have no resentment. See, if I have a resentment towards somebody, I have to make amends. And I could care less if you laugh at me. I could care less. You know why I care less? Because when I have a resentment, it hurts this guy. See, I have no resentment today. See, but I ain't angry no more. That's the problem. See, you both addicts and alcoholics got this guy sobered up. That's the problem. See, I'm working on 12 years one day at a time, and I still go to a lot of meetings. Yeah, I still go to a lot of meetings. I go through a lot of meetings to the day they throw the dirt on me. They might bury me in Santa Clara County. I know I ain't going to get out alive, and I like the things you two say. Thank you.
How about you, Ron? You want to say something?
Sure. Hello, my name is Luther B.
How
are you doing? I'm an addict. I'm from San Francisco also, and I enjoy seeing someone from San Francisco who says that they're from San Francisco, that still lives there, that can get up here and speak. I'm a newcomer, yet I can't go back home because I'm not confident anywhere around the disease. I have to be far away from San Francisco where I was born and raised because everyone that I know in San Francisco more or less uses something. And I like to go back home someday and be able to go there 4 hours a day and live there. My kids are there, my grandkids, some of my family. There's a lot of people there I like to spread the program to, but I'm just not strong enough myself to do that right now. I had a habit of the 23 years that I was addicted and used. I was saturating myself with my drug of choice and anything else that came along. I was able to do that. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. And I found out that when I got here that in order to stay here and be honest, that I had to saturate myself with the program. And today I find myself working my steps pretty heavily. Every time I can think of one to work, I've got past my first, I did my fifth step, and I've had to go back and do another fifth step. I am fortunate enough to be a person that's been a role model for some people since I have made it here, that have wrote me, and today I am working with others, which I enjoy very much. I'm going to several jails and visiting people and writing to some people and hoping that they can make the choice to come here myself. I mean, themselves, as I did. I have a tendency to run things when I was in disease, and I don't do that anymore. I have to fight the compulsion to do that. And things are working out for me today. Things are working out better than they ever have in my life. I would like to say thank you, everybody, for being here. I enjoy seeing people that are interested in myself as much as I'm interested in myself, and that's sincere about it, you know. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ron. I'm an addict. Don't know what I'm going to say. I got a lot out of both your chairs. In fact, I think I'm guilty of one of them that I did have 3 years. I have read my big book, and I've read the first, second, third step, and sitting there listening, I guess I really ain't learned too much. So after this meeting, I looked at it as a meeting for the one, two, three steps, and I think I'm going to go there, and I'm going to better start opening my eyes, because even though I do have 6 months now, if I do stay like I am and just sitting on my ass enjoying myself, my life hasn't really changed that much. I'll probably end up out there again. I was lucky to be able to come back this last time. I know there ain't too many comebacks. Not for me. So I'm glad I'm at this convention. And I'm glad I'm in here. And I'm even glad Bob got me up, because I hate to talk. I like to just sit back and be quiet and look at everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and good meeting for me. I like what you both have to say. You both were talking directly to me and nobody else in the room, and I like what you said about you don't burn connections. I don't burn connections either. It just seems funny because that whole thing about, man, I got principles, Holmes. I'm fucking around, man. You know, my word is good, Holmes. You can trust me, man. You know, and all that shit. I burned everybody. But I somehow, myself, I just, hey, man, don't play that, man. My word is good, Holmes. I can go to any pen in the country, man, and my word is good. I never snitched on nobody, man, and, you know, all that shit. You know, just and what you were talking about is, I just thought that was prestigious, you know, to be a dick. You know, it even sounded better. You know, I didn't con dick. I'm a dick. You know, and if I didn't get a chance to tell you that I was a dope fiend, con dick, I would just I mean, I was so cool, I didn't even have to talk. And the body language and stuff around here, I mean, and the 1, 2, 3, cha-cha-cha, man, and that was for many years. And I'm just so glad to be clean and sober and have a basic understanding of the idea that it's only today. I got up this morning and early in the Fairmont Hotel in San Jose, and I'm clean, and there's all kinds of us around here, man, and I just feel so good and so blessed, man, and it's only a gift. See, because if you give me a second, I'll start thinking about how I deserve this and how I've come so far, and if only they could see me now, you know. But the truth of the matter is, it's only a gift. It's only a gift. The only thing that I did right is I got desperate and I prayed and I said, please help me, man. I can't take it no more. I don't like it. I can't stand it. And that's the only thing I did right. It's the only thing I've ever done right is I just got desperate. You know, all the rest of it is, I mean, I find myself saying, well, why do they say that? And why do they, how come they're not doing that? And how come they're saying that prayer? And how come you can't say this? And it's like, it don't even fucking matter. The only thing is that I hurt so bad, and I had to hurt bad before I could say help, because I was raised to say, you don't never ask nobody for nothing, Holmes. You know, you just do what you got to do. Just handle it. And ain't no thing. You know, you can't keep a good man down. You know what I mean? If you play, you got to pay, but you just got to remember, you got to play again when you get out. You know, and all that shit. And that was my daily diet my whole life. You know, and then I come around here and find out that all I got to do is say, you know what, man, I need some help. I don't like the way I feel. I want to have some joy in my life. And that sounds so lame, you know, but I'm so proud to have a relationship with my children. I'm so proud to have a wife that I love. You know, and she's the wind beneath my wings, my wife. You know, and I have relationships with friends. And I see Bob, and I see Roseanne, I see people that I see at different places. You know, and sometimes we talk and sometimes we don't. You know, but the recognition is there, and it's only a gift. It's only a gift, man. You know, I ain't got nothing coming. You know, I remember all that stuff, man, but it don't mean nothing. You see, Tommy, I'm just glad, I'm just so happy to have the gift today of being clean and the opportunity to experience what is this 12 NCCNA, all that. You know, I'm just so grateful and have a cool convention, everybody.
Come on, everybody. My name is George, and I am an addict.
Ah, boy. And this is a real important part of my recovery, coming to meetings and, you know, and talking to people and letting people know what I was like and what I'm working on being now. And I caught two good messages. I'm real greedy. I figured I got days of meetings here, and I can take a lot back up to Sacramento with me. And Roseanne, what you said, something just really stuck out to me about by the grace of God. You know, I was using that myself. I'm praying all day, I pray in the morning, pray at night, say the serenity prayer 20 times. But it's me. I've got to do the work. You know, if I've got to be willing to surrender. When I was in my rehab, I went there almost the first 2 weeks fighting. You know, I don't have a problem. I've been in jail. I overdosed a couple of times. I owed everybody and their brother, you know, whole bunches of money. I work on a ship, you know, Merchant Marine. So I started out in New York, and I burned the bridges all the way to California. I can't walk across any body of water without falling in, because I ain't got no bridges left, you know. But I didn't have a problem. And after 2 weeks, you know, my counselor walked over to me and he says, very calmly, he says, you have to surrender to win. And I said, surrender to win, man. I don't surrender to nothing. You got to beat me and beat me, and then I got to get up and you got to beat me down again before, you know, I will even listen to you. And that was so true, because I mean, I was never a social user. I mean, from like my first, I was a social user for one weekend, the first weekend, and then bingo, my years at the ring, or else I wasn't happy. And my addictive behaviors, you know, I do things that I like or I think I like, and I got to keep doing them. And I'm using that, taking my bad habit here, because I like them. And I really get a lot out of Narcotics Anonymous and the meetings. Man, I look forward to it. I come down here yesterday. I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and my impulsion walking around the house was 5 o'clock. We're going to the convention. The guy's going to drive me down. Like, he's not coming for 7 more hours. Jesus, what am I going to do? It was, to me, if you told me a few months ago I'd be sitting here in an Narcotics Anonymous convention, I said, are you fucking crazy? I'd be looking out to take someone with me, maybe. I'll go here, maybe sell a little dope. And that's the way I would have thought. But this is ever so, I mean, this is, I'm in awe still, man. I can't believe this. And I sat last night in that speaker meeting, and I was just getting home. Because I felt she was talking about, I mean, she was a female, but I could relate to, like, everything she was saying. You know, and I never really used the part of the program. You know, I've heard of the other one, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I used my options before I got here. You know, I fought like hell to get into to do anything. I mean, there was always one more way. I've had a guy in my union for like 5 years. He's telling me, my union runs our own rehab center. We got a nice one in Maryland. I'm sending you down there. You know, my eyes are popping out of my head. I haven't taken a bath for 3 days. You know, I just, you know, I'm looking like an animal. And I said, no, there's no... So I just stopped going to that union hall. I said, oh, that's a good way to... I'll go to another union hall where they don't know me. And then this guy told me the same thing. And I said, well, geez, you know. And I still didn't realize it, you know. Overdosing for me, and I had to overdose with 2 firemen that knew CPR, and they revived me. And I'm sitting in the ambulance. I don't want to go because I know we got a big bag of dope there, and I paid for it, and I wanted to do it, you know. And that wasn't my, I mean, death, close to death. Well, you know, I heard someone say at a meeting, you know, you can have death here and recovery here, and you'll jog around. And that's just what I did because I could still work. My recovery was not being at my bottom was, you know, I failed the urine test. And I'm lucky enough to have a union that cares about some membership that has a rehab center. And it's amazing, you know, because I went through 17 years thinking I was a nice guy. And I heard someone say that they didn't burn connections. I burned anybody that got in my way. And I used to think that people were nice to me. You know, I'd burn you a couple of times and they'd still give me. And I'm saying, this fucking idiot, what a real jerk. You know, he's still giving me. And, you know, I don't know if he was being nice to me or what, but I really fucked him good. And anybody that came in my way, and I'm finding out here that that's not a nice way to be, you know. I mean, you just, people just don't, you know, the way I was acting, I thought was normal because everybody I was acting, hanging out with was acting like that. You know, I'd start out during the day, you know, partying, you know, with my friend, and they're going home. Let's go home. Well, I still got 2 more days left in me, you know. I went out for the gusto. I find myself, you know, hanging out with what I considered real lowlifes because I wanted to bring myself up. I'd hang out with people that I considered, you know, lower than me, you know, real gutter people. And even though I'm in the same room, doing the same things, and hanging out with them, I considered myself, maybe because I had a few dollars, or I had the credit line.
Money.
Yeah. And that was, money to me was real important. And it goes right back to when I was a kid, you know, before I didn't even heard of drugs, you know. I had PF flyers, my friend had Converse, I wanted them. You know, I had 2 pairs of dungarees, I needed 5 pairs. No matter what I had wasn't good enough. And I had to keep going for more. What you had was good, because I didn't have it. You know, instead of looking at what I have and be grateful, I looked at what you had that I didn't have and was jealous. And I find that I come to these meetings, telling I hear someone say 10 years, and I say, well, I want that. And then sometimes I get in my head, well, it would be nice to wake up today and wake up tomorrow and have 10 years.
And I said, well, you already lost 17 years doing drugs. You're going to lose another 10 years. You know, I have to work and earn it. This one day at a time is ever so true, I find. Because I can't look it down the road because it really scares me. But I could go through one day and catch two meetings in a day and know everything's okay. Because I've got a sponsor and I pray. So I consider myself having two higher powers. I consider my God a higher power, and I consider like NA a higher power for me, because this is a big part of my recovery, and I better let someone else talk. We'll turn this into a speaker meeting.
That's all the time we have. I'd like to once again thank Bob and Roseanne for sharing with us.